Monday, October 18th, 2021. This is LA Podcast, the 196th episode. We've never missed a week. And this is a really special episode, not just because we have a lot of news, but this is the first episode where none of the hosts identify as male hosts. This is the all-women podcast.
Hey, now. Woohoo! This is awesome. More of this.
More of this, please. It only took us 200 episodes.
But we shattered the glass ceiling here at LA Podcast.
LA Podcast glass ceiling. Would you ladies like to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Cerise Castle. I am a freelance reporter. I wrote the history of gangs in the sheriff's department.
And I'm nowhere near as impressive, but my name is Rachel Reyes, and I am a community organizer here in LA.
And I'm Alyssa Walker, this regular old host that's around here sometimes and happy to be in the company of these two impressive people. Thank you, just real quick, everyone who signed up for new members September. We have a lot of awesome things planned for all of our new subscribers. If you haven't subscribed yet, you can do so for as low as $5 a month over at patreon.com/LA Podcast, where we also have a new TMZ episode up this week. Rachel?
Yes. So Scott and I sat down and discussed Spanglish as a nice send-off for Latinx History Month. And it was great. We both loved the film, and I think we had some laughs. So feel free to listen to that. I had a lot of fun.
And all of those are no more paywall. People can just watch movies and listen to people talk about movies about LA to your heart's content, and share those with anyone you would like. We have a lot to talk about this week. Most of it will come a bit later in the show. Let's go through some of the, you know, just the other big news. We do have a lot of big news, but some of it is just like regular big news. Dodgers won.
Yes, we did. Yeah. Yes,
as we're recording this on Friday, they won last night. Does anyone want that to be their LA story? I know Rachel always keeps us abreast of.
Oh, yes. That actually was my baseball. LA story. But before I get into that, I do want to say happy Striketober to everyone who is celebrating, from Kellogg's workers to John Deere and maybe IATSE by the time you're listening to this. I guess we will see.
I'm hearing yes. Sources say yes.
True. Our show will go up maybe like the moment that strike begins. So if you're listening to this, it may have begun.
And speaking of strikes, Max Scherzer pitched a ball that Wilmer Flores did not hit. So that is a strike.
Controversial. Controversial.
To be determined. I didn't know if you swung a bat and you didn't hit the ball that was controversial.
I learned the difference between a check swing and a swing when this happened. It was very contentious.
A lot of people
in my house.
I saw a strike. So in my heart,
I'm not debating. Like, I'm a Dodger fan, but
I saw a strike. This is for all those listeners who were chanting "Beat LA," and it didn't work. Once again, it did not work. So go Dodgers. We are one series away from the World Series. We have to play the Braves to get there, but I am confident that we will be in the World Series once again. So go Dodgers, go workers.
Get your fireworks ready for both celebrations.
I mean, they're already going off.
It's true.
That was my favorite thing about my week in LA, was just like watching the games with my front door open and hearing all my neighbors like screaming along with me when they would get a run. And then immediately when we won the series, there were just so many fireworks. And yeah, it's my favorite part of watching the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's like you can know the turn the game has taken just by the amount of explosives that you immediately hear adjacent to your house.
What a great city.
Love it. The best city in the world.
My LA story was another, I think, great moment for LA this week. Ciclovia came back on Sunday. The streets were closed from our house all the way to Boyle Heights. My six-year-old daughter rode her bike to Mariachi Plaza. We live near MacArthur Park, and she rode all the way there. She rode a total of 9 miles, we think, the entire day. Just one of those great days where you see people out, you kind of see this LA that's possible if we, you know, just made a few small changes to our street that could be there all the time. My congressman, Jimmy Gomez, gave this speech at the opening that morning that was like, why isn't like this all the time? And I wanted to be like, because of you guys. Like, literally, it is all you elected officials that are standing up here right now that have not made this a priority. So a great day. Happy to be back out there. Welcome back, Ciclovia. But let's elect some people that might actually change them before we have to go another 10 years of Ciclovia. It's been 10 years of Ciclovia. All right. We had some other headlines this week that we can dive into really quickly. Monday was Indigenous Peoples Day, and there was a major ceremony that happened at a place that we've talked about a lot before. It's a park, the park like right across from Union Station. I think a lot of people call it Father Sarah Park, but apparently it's not technically even named that. But the statue of him was taken down very, ceremoniously, I guess, in a very dramatically, and because of the, you know, great harm that of his people caused to the original people who lived here in Los Angeles. What happened in the park that morning was that the city of LA made an apology to two different tribes. There's the Tongva tribe and the Fernandinho Tataviam tribe. And what they did was say, not only are we making an apology to you, we're going to change the name of this park, and we're going to grant you a cultural easement so you can use the land for ceremonies and other things that we would allow people to use the land for. It's not necessarily going all the way to a land back motion. This is something that's been done in a lot of other cities and a lot of other states, where you're actually literally giving the land back. But it is maybe a first step as part of this big cultural, this big civic memory project that has been, the city has been working on, which I thought the report was really great and had some good recommendations. But the problem is connecting it to policy. And while this is a good first step, it's probably not going to be enough on its own. What I thought was really interesting about this ceremony and this conversation that's been started is that part of it would be a potential redesign of the flag and the seal. And I just had some questions for the two of you. You know what is on the seal?
I actually do.
Oh, okay. All right. Go for it.
I do. Okay. Let's see if I'm right. Okay. Just the seal, not the flag?
So we'll do the seal first, and then we'll do the flag.
Okay. So the flag is, top left is an American flag. Top right is a little California flag. Bottom right is a castle and a lion, medieval style.
This is really good. You're 3 for 4. Yeah. I'll give you a hint. It's a bird.
Oh, it's the eagle on the branch with the snake in his mouth, a la the Mexican flag.
Exactly. So you did it exactly right. Our seal is the coat of arms of the United States, the flag of the California Republic, the bear, the coat of arms for Mexico, and the coat of arms for Spain. What's missing in this picture is, you know, many things, but namely, I think the point from this ceremony or this, conversation that was started on Monday is that it completely erases everything that came before. And then the flag, I often talk about LA's.
I love flag. The flag.
I think it's very distinctive.
I just know the color.
I want to fly it.
It's got very bold and graphic.
Very bold.
Design.
It's very Rastafari.
Yeah, it's basically
that's why I love it.
It's basically the Rastafari.
That's
flag.
What I feel is accurate about this city. It's like you have this Rastafarian flag with the seal just like slapped on it. It's that's my Los Angeles.
I love the colors. I love the like, you know, weird like zigzag edges.
Yeah.
But then to put the seal on it just seems dumb. So, I mean, I think that takes away from the, you know, the greatness of it. But I often talk about this as like, you know, when just when people, you know, the state flags, the city flags, such a conversation about like how they're all horrible. And I think it could be improved for sure. I always use this as an example. So do you know what the colors stand for? We didn't even really talk about what the colors are, but what are the colors of our flag?
I know what they stand for Rastafarians.
All right, let's compare and contrast. So there's green, the olive land. Trees.
Kind of.
Yeah, that was like grass.
The land.
Okay.
The land. That's similar.
Gold.
The sun.
Orange groves.
No.
You're like, no. And red is?
Blood.
Vineyards.
No. Vineyards.
What? So this is like a full
Malibu
agricultural.
Wine.
Like top to bottom. Yeah. California.
And again, the argument is, you know, these things were kind of brought here. They weren't the things that, you know, existed here. So,
interesting.
So yes, redesign the flag.
Like for what was here and
seal,
who was here.
Like, yeah, what? I mean, how would this process? I feel like this could be the like worse than redistricting if we begin down this path.
I would kind of love to have like an open contest.
Yeah.
Like, didn't they have something like that in like some Scandinavian country where they had just like had an open design for
they had
something?
It for the Vietnam War Memorial. It was an open design. It was also like,
there you go.
No names, no photos, just designs were sent in.
And there was also a great controversy that Rachel reminded me of with the County of LA seal.
Yes,
recently.
Because this is what I thought the quiz was about when I saw the notes. I was like, oh, I know this. So the county seal was redesigned when I was a child, like 10, 11, around there. And I remember the whole, you know, impetus of this was to remove the cross that was on the county seal. And this had Catholics up in arms. A lot of anyone, if you loved Jesus, you did not want that removed from the county seal. And I just remember this being like this open debate everywhere in the paper, on TV. Anyway, my mom ended up buying a bunch of merchandise from the county. She works for the county.
What kind of merchandise does the county have?
Mugs, towels. They are swagged out.
The county has
merch for
an
days.
Entire
they have a store? Really?
Yes. Oh, in
dedicated
the building?
Uh-huh. To it's county great. Swag.
Whoa. Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
And the county coroner also used to have a gift shop. So we have like towels that have like the body outline on them. And it's like LA County Coroner.
Do those still have the those still have the cross? I'm sure.
Yeah.
But like, okay, so this was in 2016, I think we found out. So
I thought it was before that.
I mean, this was
being,
the
like,
ruling. The rule. There was a court case. I mean, it could have been earlier, but there was a court case
was
that was trying
mind.
To keep it on. And then they finally ruled in 2016 that it does not have a place on the seal, which
I mean,
found interesting.
Like it doesn't.
All right. So give the land back.
Yes.
Change the flag. Change the seal. I think are our recommendations for the city of LA.
And that's
what
free advice.
On the flag?
I mean, I don't even know where to begin. Not a palm tree, please. But
only
I think
the In-N-Out palm trees, actually.
I just want something simple. Like, that's, I like what, you know, I guess, like, of all the things you could have those things stand for, olives, oranges, and wine, but not, it's not bad. It's not the worst thing, but I don't know why those colors aren't really carried through in anything, I feel like, else.
Nowhere else.
Yeah. Mm. All right, good luck. Good luck, City of LA, or next mayor. This is your job now.
Ah, indeed. Good luck indeed to the next mayor of Los Angeles.
So our second quick hit story here is we've been talking a lot over the last few weeks about the supply chain issues, which are technically our fault because 40% of the commerce that comes through this country has to come through the Port of Los Angeles. And we've had a backup, as to put it maybe politely, that's caused a major environmental disaster potentially as part of these ships waiting to dock and unload their cargo. Now, the president, Joe Biden, has ordered that the port has to go 24 hours a day, has to operate 24 hours a day. This, again, if you hear this, by the time you hear this, this will be in place. It takes a few weeks for it to ramp up because they've got to hire a bunch of people and get all the other procedures in place. Something has to not only unload it once it gets there, but they have to figure out how they're going to move it out of the port. But one thing that I wanted to just And I, of course, there were all these questions like at the White House press conference, like, will the Christmas presents arrive in time? Like, so yes, thanks to us, your Christmas presents will arrive in time. But what I wanted to highlight just as part of this, since we've already caused one environmental disaster, is that there are great concerns after we've spent all this time and money trying to clean up the port. Going back to 24-hour operation is very, very bad for the communities that live around the port. We had these some amazing tweets from the East Yard Communities Environmental Justice Group just talking about how, you know, again, we've spent all this time trying to clean it up. We've tried to get these emissions down so the communities around there don't have to breathe this toxic air. And also, like, wow, the president can just, like, make this flip a switch and make the port operate 24 hours a day, but can't fix any of the other major environmental challenges that we've been asking for this entire time. So, I mean, I guess it's worth it. You get your Christmas presents, but then we have to suffer.
We do have to suffer. Gosh, one thing that was really reading about this, like that really was on my mind, was just thinking about the Clean Air Agreement that everyone signed on to in 2017. And just how terrible this is and how it's just a complete 180 for the priorities that were supposedly supposed to be in place. You think about all the emissions that are going to be happening as a result of this 24-hour operation.
Noise. Like, it's very noisy. Yeah.
I read Grist had a great article where they spoke to the California Air Resources Board, and they haven't, you know, counted the emissions yet, but they projected that it could be up, you know, at least 50%.
Great.
Merry Christmas to us.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. In addition to our oil spill.
And also a lot of these workers at the ports are misclassified. So there's also like the labor issue part of this. Who are these workers that are going to be working all hours of the night? Are they getting paid a premium? Do they have health insurance? Those are questions that I also want answered. Yeah. Are we going to find all of these people to work 24 hours, or are we going to simply work the existing workers to the bone?
And there was one clause in the story that I read, the LA Times story, that was about how you have to be 21 to work at the port right now in certain jobs. And they were considering lowering the age to like 18, but that would require, you know, some kind of legal movement to be able to do that. But you're right. Like, it's once again like this, who gets to benefit from this change and who suffers? Big
we
one.
Do.
We always do. Another big story, and again, by the time you've heard this, we will know the outcome of this, but just to keep it on your radar, we've talked about it a little bit over the last few weeks, but MacArthur Park will have closed on Friday night at 10:30 p.m. The southern half, you know how Wilshire cuts through the middle of it and it kind of bisects it, so this will be the southern half of the park will be completely fenced in Gil Cedillo's attempt to pretend that it's not going to be like Echo Park's fencing to try to displace the people who live there, but we're not quite sure how that's going to turn out. He put out a chart, which I thought was just amazing in the way that it like specifically tried to cast shade against what Mitch O'Farrell had done. Like, here are all the ways that I am not the same as a council member who did the Echo Park, like a compare contrast chart. They're promising that it will be open again in 10 weeks. They have an end date. Remember, Echo Park didn't have an end date when it closed. Echo Park was also a surprise, and then they lied about it when the journalists tried to find out when it was closing.
Classic
move. So we've got, and I also want to give a shout out to the Neighborhood Council in MacArthur Park. They put out this list of demands at their last meeting just for what they want to be done as part of the closing. They agree that, like, you know, some maintenance issues could be addressed, but it shouldn't come at the cost of the people who are going to be displaced. And CDO did put out a release a couple days ago saying that over 300 people have been placed into housing. It's temporary housing, but, and, you know, right. We don't know how to believe those numbers, because as we know with Echo Park, 6 months later, only 4 people had moved into permanent housing.
Right.
What do you think? Is this going to be another Echo Park? Will it be more like the Venice situation?
One thing that I think a lot about when we talk about MacArthur Park is sort of the push by electeds and law enforcement alike to say, oh, we need to clean this up because this park is infested with MS-13. And that's just sort of like, it's a narrative that I think on some level is true. Like, I myself have like encountered members of MS-13 being like just existing in MacArthur Park myself as an individual. But I don't know. I'm really weirded out by just this like notion that, oh, okay, like there's all this like horrible crime happening here and we have to like get rid of the gangs that are living in the park. I don't think I've read or seen anyone actually like talk to this like proverbial gang member that lives in the park.
Yeah, there was an LA Times story that was, there was a some kind of attack on a transgender member of one of the park's communities, like one of the people who are living in the camp. I mean, but again, like we don't, you don't know if those kind of stories are being reported just to give the elected officials something to point to say, hey, right, we need to do this now. And that is in, mentioned in all the press releases from CDO's office.
Right. It's MS-13, MS-13, yeah, MS-13. Yeah, yeah. The thing about that story that really confused me was like MS-13 is like harassing everyone in this park and collecting thousands of dollars, and then also said that they're still living in tents in the park. So right. The narrative there doesn't really make sense to me. And like, yeah, I mean, I would just, I'm really curious to hear, like, everyone keeps talking about MS-13. Like, again, like, I've met MS-13 in the park. Like, the people I talked to were willing to answer my questions. We even smoked some pot together. Like, I'm really interested to hear from the gang members of MS-13 and just, like, I don't know, like, in a real manner that doesn't involve law enforcement pushing a narrative that doesn't really make sense when you examine it.
Yeah. And it was about that in Venice, too, I think. Well, and Echo Park, I guess they were all, there's always this, like, people are charging rent and extorting people, right? There's always that, too.
I just think, to your point, Alyssa, I do feel like these stories that come out are oftentimes just cover for cops and for elected officials to point to and say, yeah, see, there is reporting that says there's a gang infestation in these parks, so we have to shut them down, we have to clean it out. So it totally, I definitely read those stories with an eye of disbelief just because I feel like they are giving cover to the wrong people.
Right.
And I will say, like, it has already been so cleared out. Like, first of all, on Ciclovia, it was crazy because that was one of the hubs. And they are literally, like, putting up barricades in the street and closing off a street. And people are riding their bikes. And, you know, the great thing about Ciclovia is they don't displace people. They just close the streets. They let everybody else, like, chill because it's like, you know, they can enjoy it, too. Like, that's what it's for. I'm not saying that they're doing the wrong thing. But the city can close the street, create a public space. And then also at the same time, the fence poles are going in and there's cops driving around, like, on the grass of MacArthur Park. You know, they were really, like, preparing to shut this down and, like, and hassling people at that moment. And the northern part of the park, they just put in a new playground. It's completely cleared out. Like, they have already displaced so many people. And you go there now and you're just like, you know, where did these people go? Like, do we really believe that they are all, like, in Project Room Key rooms or something? Like, I don't. You know from what's happened in other places that, you know, people just move around the corner.
Right.
And we also know that two other major camps have been swept or in the process of being swept. The Shadow Camp outside of Shadow Recreation Center, speaking of Mitch O'Farrell, bulldozers, like that giant bike sculpture that you saw across from Shadow Lanes, it's all gone. And he was saying, of course, we're going to house these people in the Recreation Center, which is not reopening until next month. So I don't know where you're supposed to go from now until then. And then the Veterans Camp is supposedly being swept November 1st, just in time for Veterans Day. You are so welcome.
Just down the street from my house, so I will be there.
Yes, thank you. And you mentioned before, Rachel, that it was Striketober. We have some strike updates quickly.
So yes, sources say, those close to us say that the IATSE strike is probably happening right now as you're listening to this. I don't know. I can't predict the future. But a lot of workers are reporting that studios are rushing workers to finish filming, adding additional working days over the weekend, as well as overtime, just to get that content out so that no one can edit it, or so that international scabs that they're intending to fly in will edit these this content. So it's really weird. And I was thinking about this idea of getting workers from studios in Australia and England to come to the States or just stay where they are and edit remotely. Just like international scabs is very odd to me. But then I thought we do the same thing across all industries, but for some reason this feels different, but it's probably not. I just thought it was very weird. But other unions like the Teamsters have also said that they will not work on IATSE sets should the strike happen. So this is not only going to affect IATSE, it's going to affect other unions as well. And the Fed, our County Federation of Labor, also said that other unions will be lending support on picket lines next week. So this will be mobilizing unions beyond IATSE. This is really going to be a show of solidarity throughout the nation, but certainly in Los Angeles, which is a union town. So I am very curious to see what this week will look like.
And as far as the other, you had one more strike that we had been updated on. Thanks to you.
I would love to update everyone on this CVS and Rite Aid contracts that I had talked about a couple of times over the summer. These contracts have been ratified, which is very exciting. A strike was avoided. And there's a lot of really great things in there. So I encourage you to Google the 770 website and see all of the great bits in there. But my two personal favorites include a staffing requirement. So anytime a CVS is open, there have to be two employees at the front of the store. And this is because, unfortunately, a 770 member was murdered over the summer at his store. And also inclusive name tags. So people's pronouns can be on the name tags. And this also includes a they, them, theirs option, which I think is great. So just two of my favorite little bits in the CVS contract.
Nice. And also something to keep our eye on this week, Netflix employees will be having a walkout this coming week. And we have something about that in our newsletter. So hopefully you subscribe to our newsletter about the CEO of Netflix has really responded very poorly to complaints from many workers, many trans workers, that they just thought the Dave Chappelle special that just came out was transphobic and has other issues as well. And they have tried to make their concerns heard, and some people have been fired, including someone today who is a pregnant Black organizer, was fired for supposedly leaking data on how successful, quote unquote, the Dave Chappelle show was to the press. So keep an eye on that. I guess we just have to create our own entertainment starting this week, because everything's going to be dark.
Yes.
All right. So the big story. What happened this week?
Did something big happen?
We need to have a theme song for this as well. Many people have been asking what the theme song is, because we have a Weezer theme song.
Blow the whistle. Has to be the theme song.
I was thinking something like, MRT, calling USC.
Oh, gosh.
Get something for SRT.
I think you should record that.
Yeah. Get him out of the assembly.
Wow. Bars.
You've really thought about this. I appreciate that.
I've typed it so many times, and I'm like, wow, all these things rhyme. Like, so what happened? What happened? We have our third. Let me just say, we have 15 council members. We have had three over the past 2 years have to be apprehended by the FBI on federal indictment charges. We posted the document on Wednesday that you can view on our Twitter account. But what we're looking at here is Mark Ridley Thomas, someone who we've talked about very often on this show. That's why we refer to him as MRT, because we just don't have time to say the full name. And he is the recently elected council member for District 10. He used to be a county supervisor, and he actually before that was also a council member before that time. And the shortest way to explain it is he has a son named Sebastian Ridley Thomas, who we will refer to as SRT. He also has twins. There's actually two SRTs. He has a twin brother named Sinclair, but he is not involved in this.
Thank God.
Possibly. So he was elected to the state assembly when he was very young. He was 26 years old, one of the youngest people ever elected to the state assembly. And in 2017, it was discovered that he was being investigated for sexual harassment. So what the documents from these federal investigators allege is that MRT hatched a plan to get SRT out of the state assembly and into a job at USC, where, side note, MRT has a PhD in ethics. Just a reminder. And the job for SRT would be in the School of Social Work. However, he did not have a degree. So part of it also had to be that he had to earn a degree in a special online program set up for
First
of its kind, before social distancing. This is 2017. And to do all this, MRT colluded with Marilyn Louise Flynn, who was the dean of the School of Social Work, no longer there, but she is named also in the this very long document of 20 counts of conspiracy, bribery concerning programs receiving federal funds, mail and wire fraud. And so what this case is setting up is that not only did they get him a job at USC using all these improprietous methods, but also there are two major twists. And I just want to say, this is not new information, because this was known in 2018 when the LA Times reported on this. And that is actually what referred, you know, USC actually referred this scheme to the feds at the time, and the LA Times found out about it and wrote a story. So we actually talked about it. I wasn't there this episode, but in our 21st episode of LA Podcast with Scott and Hayes, RIP Hayes, this is what they said. I just want to play a clip because I think it's very telling that we picked up on this part of it.
This is kind of an area where we can sort of see USC is possibly getting itself into hot water with its old tricks again, trying to sort of hand out favors to very well-connected members of the LA community. Now, you mentioned that his scholarship might be worth around $100,000. Why is that important?
Yeah, because so far, everything we've described is like, it's gross, but like not out of the realm of what USC and other huge private universities do all the time. What is extra gross and makes it a federal crime potentially is at the same time that Sebastian Ridley Thomas is getting hired as a faculty member and being admitted as a graduate student and getting a scholarship to an online school at the same time, the School of Social Work got a $100,000 donation from Sebastian Ridley Thomas's dad, Mark Ridley Thomas.
Okay. Yes.
And it did not go straight to the university. It went through the university to Sebastian Ridley Thomas's nonprofit, which looks a lot like money laundering.
It looks a lot like money laundering. When you put it like that.
From a father-son money laundering.
So, and not only that, so that's one part. The other part is that, in addition to that, USC, which was at the time in MRT's supervisorial district, and particularly the School of Social Work and its related departments, magically got many, many contracts from the county during the same period. I can't imagine how that could have happened. So things like Department of Children and Family Services, there was some mental health contracts, things like that. So things that would have been, you know, directly vote, and they were just voted on one by one in the county at these meetings during this period. Scott, who is not here today, our co-host Scott Frazier, recorded this amazing 47-minute explainer of the whole situation that you can listen to. We released it as an emergency episode, and I really highly recommend that you listen to that if you want more background. But what we're going to talk about today is kind of three little buckets. One, this idea that this was in no way surprising, both because the investigation had been, you know, unearthed in 2018, but also in the context of the larger legal issues faced by our elected officials. Two, what is the deal with USC? And three, how do we look at the context of what MRT is doing, both at the county and the state, and should we be questioning a lot of those decisions? So first of all, I will pose the question to you both. Were you shocked? Apparently we were shocked. All the headlines are like, shocking, stunning. Are you shocked?
I mean, anyone that like has been paying attention, like I think the general consensus among everyone I spoke to was this has been a long time coming. And not just when you look at the situation with his son. You know, there's been smoke for a long time.
I laughed. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't shocking. I was just like, oh, yeah. I forgot that that was going on so many years ago pre-COVID. So,
yeah, it is. It was kind of like, oh, they're still doing this, but it takes time to put together these cases, right? Immediate responses. The very first person to speak out was Joe Buscaino, who immediately was at the gate being like, get out of here. Surrender your seat. You're done for. Followed by, I mean, I will say, like, not many other people offered up a Twitter type of statement in that way. Everyone kind of filtered their responses through the press. So Nuri Martinez, council president, had to be contacted to give her opinion, which was that they would take the appropriate actions. No further detail on what that might entail. She is a council president.
And there should be a process because this is now the third
council member that has been
federally indicted. Yes. Not to mention that there are still two currently under investigation.
Oh yeah, let's go over that really quickly, Cerise. Like, let's remind people.
Yeah, so there are more. I mean, maybe there will be more coming. John Lee, a.k.a. staffer number one.
Staffer B.
And Mr. Curran Price, to be seen, So stay tuned. Maybe we'll have up to five, a solid third.
That'd be amazing.
Council.
That would be, like, what do we win for that as a city? Like, we really get some kind
Rico.
Of reward. And those two sitting council members are both implicated in these other investigations that have already taken out previous council members.
Which, exactly.
If you listen to the show, you are very familiar with those things. But this is kind of a twist in one sense that up until a few weeks ago, MRT was being talked about as a mayoral candidate, like the favored mayoral candidate. He said that he was not going to run. And everybody kind of thought that's why he switched from the county to the city. And then he said he wasn't going to run. And then when Karen Bass announced a few weeks ago, then people started to say, oh, maybe he wants Karen Bass's seat when she gets to be mayor. So this has thrown all of that asunder.
He's going to jail.
And, and she removed him immediately from her endorsements page. Didn't say anything publicly that I could find, but that was her move. We did have something interesting, I felt, too, with the mayor himself was giving, like, some kind of HHH groundbreaking speech this morning, that morning that this came out the next day. And at first gave his very typical, like, we should wait until the investigation, is done, and then we'll make judgment. Like, people are good and bad. He somehow always says the same thing for anything that happens. But then the KTLA news reporter got him after, and somebody must have said, you got to go harder, or maybe, like, showed him the actual, like, paper or something.
They showed him the shush emoji.
They said there's at least one shush emoji in this document.
And a wink,
and a fist bump emoji. So there are many emojis, which I do appreciate them leaving those in from the communication that went back and forth between USC and MRT. He said something like, I'm not your mayor today. I'm just a citizen and I'm really angry. So again, what will be done? We don't know. Councilmember Rahman did suggest that he should be removed from his committee roles because, again, this calls into question some of those votes. Mm-hmm. That would be similar to what has happened with our previous friends who have left.
Friends of the money launderers.
Friends of the FBI.
Friends of the criminals.
And then there is an option just for the city to stop paying them, a la Weezer, where you basically say you don't get a paycheck anymore. So we'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how strong of a statement or what appropriate actions will be made. But let's talk for a minute about USC, because we talk about USC all the time. And you have to wonder, you know, this was in 2017. So they've been making some changes, we hear. But to have them in the news again and again and again, I asked Rachel to kind of give us her perspective here, because I thought you had some interesting thoughts about why does this keep happening?
So yeah, there's a lot to say here. And I'm going to try to not do like deep dives on all of these, but we need to break up USC. Like,
I love this idea.
We need another public university in Los Angeles, and USC needs to be another one of them, because this is ridiculous. So
maybe free from the UC system, though. I mean, that hasn't
completely independent. Right. I love this idea.
Like an independent,
yeah. A completely independent,
an independent USC that is public. So USC is a problem. It fancies itself the Ivy of the West Coast, but more locally is known as the University of Spoiled Children, and that is for a reason. So, you know, when we look at USC, power necessitates abuse. So as long as there is money to be made, there will be abuse. And when you take a step back and look at all of the recent controversies surrounding USC, even if you just start at like 2000, you don't even go into the 90s, there's a lot there. So I want to talk about an old friend of ours, Reggie Bush. Early 2000s, was at SC, you know, a Rose Bowl champ, a Heisman Trophy winner. However, you know, made USC a lot of money also, by the way, for being a fantastic football player, but was forced to vacate those wins because he accepted money at the time, which was not allowed. And so I think it's really interesting that we can just look at USC and see who is allowed to make money off of their status and their time at USC and who is not.
And their athletics in particular.
Exactly. Yes. And so now there's like a new rule, which is NIL, the name, image, and likeness, that does allow college athletes to get paid off of their NIL within certain states. My also other opinion is that we should abolish college football, but that's like a whole other kettle of fish that we don't need to get into.
Oh, yeah, we can also get the Rose Bowl somehow.
Public park. Anyway, let's go on. Let's leave football, but still stay in the sports world. Let's talk about George Tyndall. He is a former gynecologist at USC who had a 30-year tenure. And trigger warning, content warning for listeners. We are going to talk briefly about sexual abuse here. George Tyndall was arrested in 2019 and charged with 29 felonies, including 18 counts of sexual penetration and 11 counts of sexual battery by fraud. And the LA Times wrote a piece investigating his abuse in 2018. Although he had already resigned from USC in 2016 with a large payout. And USC ended up releasing documents 3 years later in 2019 related to Tyndall's employment. And these documents include student complaints about him dating all the way back to 1991, the year that I was born. And so for those of you that can't do math, that is 30 years of student complaints about this gynecologist at USC. And absolutely nothing was done. He was the only gynecologist at USC. And the DA's office is currently still investigating over 700 claims related to him. And it's just disturbing to me. So there's also that part.
And you also had the gymnasts this week that have been so outspoken about this, who, you know, basically calling for the dissolution of the Olympics committee.
U.S. gymnasts calling for that abolishment because of Larry Nassar. And so there is a long tradition of just athletes in general being abused, especially Olympic athletes being abused. No Olympics has a lot to say about this with regards to LA as well. But again, we see there with the Olympics,
it's USC, with college it's sports, Olympics, it's college sports, it's LA.
Power necessitates abuse. Yeah, and these these houses of money, these people that are just emblematic of greed, they will abuse you to get more money. Yeah. And it's the same thing with USC. And then finally, you know, most famously, I guess recently, is Operation Varsity Blues.
I know.
Which touched on, you know, USC is one of the schools involved. And I feel like we all know this well enough, but Operation Varsity Blues was the largest ever college admissions bribery scandal, with 33 parents charged, all of them wealthy. But I'll touch on two that we know, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin. Two famous people. And so the nature of these particular bribes took on various forms. But for brevity, we'll just discuss Lori Loughlin, because I think that is the most famous because she has daughters who are influencers. So some of these bribes, you know, included coaches at schools, including USC. They would pretend that students were the sought after athletes in particular sports. And with regards to Lori Loughlin's daughters, they were crew stars. And so they took photos on ergs. And then they were admitted into USC as these top recruits for their sports. And so other cases within Operation Varsity Blues included fake exam scores, like other people were taking the exams for the students. These students were not charged. Most, if not all, did not even know that these deals were going on, which is really unfortunate.
And they were allowed to stay.
Yeah. Lori Loughlin's daughters, I think, both left USC. But yeah, the students were allowed to stay. It was a whole mess. It's a whole mess. And there's like a Netflix special on it, or maybe it's Hulu.
There's a scripted Netflix series. Yes. It's honestly, reading the indictment is a lot better.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. But, you know, as Alyssa, as you mentioned earlier, we do have to now, in my opinion, examine all of MRT's crucial votes. And something that is very close to my heart was his vote in 2014 regarding the LA County Museum of Art, LACMA, as we will refer to it as. There was this plan that is now in motion. It was an unnecessary, again, in my opinion, expansion of the county's museum that at the time happened to be in MRT's supervisorial district. And it appears to me and to journalists that this project was given the green light largely by MRT after a $25,000 donation to a PAC he founded was made by Sony.
Another PAC, huh?
Another PAC. And if you're wondering, why Sony? How random. It is. But Sony's CEO sits on LACMA's board of trustees. So LACMA's CEO, Michael Govan, had been courting the county for at least a year at that point, because he wanted a large donation of public money in order to bring in more private funds. So he was seeking $125 million from the county, but the project in total at the time was meant to be $600 million. I believe it is already expected to go over. And in 2014, the County Board of Supervisors did unanimously vote to use, again, $125 million taxpayer dollars to fund a total overhaul of LACMA's campus. And I also included this cute little photo of MRT and Michael Govan.
Yeah.
So look into that. Also look into the Olympics votes, you know, look into everything, because I don't see why we should stop here. It looks like on the surface, and I'm not a journalist, okay? I'm not an investigator.
You fooled me.
But my own Googling showed me.
Just 5 minutes of Googling.
She Googled MRT.
I Googled him and I found a lot of weird stuff. So,
I mean, yeah, that I love envisioning the money like going from like Sony like to the PAC to USC. Just like this path of money, LACMA, you know, it's all like, it's just like the same dirty dollars. But this, I mean, really what, and you're right, like you kind of brought up these USC scandals, and this particular one has like flavors of all of them in a way. We do have like a sexual harassment case, like where, you know, it was very clear in the news at the end of 2018 that there were several serious allegations against Sebastian Ridley Thomas mm-hmm. when he was in the state assembly. There was this amazing moment in the state legislature, this group, We Said Enough, that was just publishing all these amazing stories of these women who were coming forward in the wake of the Me Too movement and saying the problem is just as bad in our state capital as it is anywhere in Hollywood. And this was part of that. And all USC thinks it's totally fine just to like hire this person,
have him
and
be a
bring
professor.
Him on board when this was out there. It wasn't like, you know, these were headlines that were being published at the time. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was what we usually talk about when we talk about MRT on this show is homelessness, because he's been championed, quote unquote, by a lot of different groups and other leaders. You know, the stories are kind of like this: what a shame he was such a great partner on homelessness that he has to go through this now. And I would say our opinion in this room is probably not that he was a great champion of, you know, fixing the problem. Rather, he was introducing some rather destructive new mechanisms by proposing 4118. I mean, what are our thoughts on like his legacy, I guess, of like what, you know, was he really trying to address a problem, or was he introducing like the criminalization really of the issue at this time? With 4118, as you remember, in the last few weeks, we have him kind of just come forward and propose this brand new like amendment of how we deal with what we call street strategies, which is the polite way of saying it.
Way of saying braid.
Way of saying we have a bulldozer and get out of your tent because we're tearing it down in 5 minutes. So what's interesting, I think, in the context of this investigation is United Way is not named in the document, but in the reporting from the LA Times in 2018, that money that funneled through USC to the think tank by SRT, I'm telling you, I'm going to sing the song every time, was a fiscal sponsorship that was from the United Ways, the state level. So it's United Ways, plural, of California. So his think tank was called the Policy Research and Practice Initiative, which is the vaguest name. It's basically ungoogleable. And there really is no information, because if you are in a fiscal sponsorship from this giant organization that does much more than homelessness stuff, but you can't get any information on that, basically. And I tried to contact them and get more information on, like, you know, when was it started? When is it finished? Like, is it still around? So United Way is important to talk about, because going back before 4118, United Way, along with MRT, was, I would call them, the architects of Measure H. Do you remember Measure H? So that's what we voted on. So we voted on in March of 2017. And that's a sales tax that pours up to, you know, $355 million annually into social work contracts, similar to the contracts that might have been awarded from the county to places like USC. So these are things like homeless outreach, health and mental health services. These are all the things that we have been talking about here, because we need a lot of people. The money was basically going to those places to make sure that people could get connected to services. I'm not saying that they didn't help or that they, you know, they weren't doing what they were supposed to do, but this street engagement policy that started with H and is now 4118 is, you know, something that MRT has really pushed. Mm-hmm. So again, it means that we do need to look very closely. And for example, Measure H passed in March 2017. Within a few months is when MRT first reaches out to USC, specifically the School of Social Work.
Huh.
That's like 2 months later, right?
Right.
And, you know, the $100,000 that, you know, was funneled through USC through United Way to this nonprofit, not a lot of money. I don't think it was because of the money. Maybe it was just like an existing relationship where he was like, oh, I know United Way really well. They'll let me set up this think tank in here. Mm-hmm. We can just do the money easily that way. But why that amount of money had to go, why did it have to go to that think tank? And what's interesting is the only expenditure that was listed in the document and also in the original 2018 reporting is that an employee was paid out of this $100,000. That's the only expenditure that this think tank did. So it doesn't seem like they were trying to like send a bunch of cash to someone. What I think And what it just seems like was there was some kind of arrangement because the person they hired had worked for SRT in the assembly. Mm. So you wonder, was there a deal that was made that was like, I'll be quiet if you give me a job or something like that, right? It's just, it's all right there in the document. But again, I don't know how we could not question all the street engagement,
street strategies
within the context of this. And I'm not saying that United Way is in any way, you know, involved instead of, unless that they were just like this pawn, you know, they were like, can you be this fiscal sponsor of this group? But I do think it just really calls into question, like, basically we've spent billions and billions of dollars. And HHH was also implicated, and affordable housing and supportive housing was also implicated in the other investigations that have been done, like what was built and for who and who profited off of that. Mm-hmm. So we really have to give a closer look to all of this. And it's, I mean, we're making jokes, but man, like, can we take much more of this as a city? Like, it's very
More coming, like almost certainly guaranteed. Mm-hmm. They're not the only people that are involved in all of this. And as we've seen in the prior indictments of both city council members, like they continue to come. Mm-hmm. Like, so maybe perhaps we have not seen the last of what will come out of this particular indictment.
And those other indictments like touch so many other people. And so I'm really curious, like who is currently still free and walking around? Is this MRT/SRT scandal going to touch that we don't? What other staffer A's and B's are going to come out?
And it's important to note that SRT himself is not named, has no charges against him, which in Scott's monologue yesterday pointed out that they may be trying to use him as leverage to talk. So the idea would be that we won't continue our investigation of whatever was done in the state assembly if you give us more information on what you know of what happened here. So yeah, there it's going to be a very drawn out, you know, it already took 3 years.
Right.
Who knows how much, and we already have our previous investigations are still ongoing. So it's going to be a long road, and it does change a lot just about the mayoral race, about, I mean, gosh, are we going to have like another like special election cascading where we have people coming out of office and going into office? It's just going to be at a time of great uncertainty already. You know, what happens now?
2022 is going to be so overwhelming.
And on top of all of that, we still have redistricting happening, and this is just going to close us out for today's episode. There's been so much drama. I don't even know where to begin, but I'll just say, please tune in to go to Unrig LA, who's been covering this so well, and tune into the next redistricting meeting. Currently, we have CD4, Councilmember Rahman's district, basically being eviscerated. And what happened this week that was really interesting was the council members appoint people to the redistricting committee. And Alexandra Sa was the representative for CD4. She was replaced by Jackie Goldberg, who is, let's just say, a formidable.
A powerhouse.
And if you need some energy, I think, for the week to get you through the ongoing corruption and
the rot,
whatever happens next with our various investigations, I just wanted to play this, and hopefully when you're feeling down on the city, you can know that there's people who are fighting hard for what is fair and right. And let's just turn it over to Miss Jackie real quickly.
Hopefully she's not city staffer B.
I've been asked by many people, why would I do this? Why am I coming on? What is going on, Goldberg? Are you mad? And here is the problem for me. I have been involved in politics for 45 years. I've been through 4 redistricting meetings at the state level and at the local level, and I have never, ever, ever, ever seen a process like this. I have never seen a process in which you're not going to discuss the 2 big issues that are left until the very last meeting. Because when you do that, there's nothing left, is there? You've already finished drawing all the lines. There's only what's left. The commission has spent a huge amount of time fine-tuning the borders of all the other districts. But every time someone mentions these two districts, which are completely new and have had the least discussion, even though they are the most impacted, we are continuously told that we will talk about it later. Map K25 was passed without any conversation about the borders of these districts and what it means that these new districts have been created this way. Furthermore, all the line drawing for these districts happened behind closed doors, even though I read clearly documents that all of the districts were going to be done publicly and in front of everybody. And interestingly enough, when I inquired, I found out that neither of the two elected officials' representatives that are being most dramatically affected were invited in that ad hoc committee, which produced Map 2.25. Now we're planning on saving the conversation about these districts to the last meeting. When everything else is done, my experience with mapping is that if you've mapped everything else, what's left is already done too, because it's what's left. And these districts have been completely ignored in this process. I am calling for a special meeting to be added to just look at these two districts and also District 3 because they are intimately involved. And I believe it is time for us to take a look at the thousands of letters that have come from different sides on this issue. And yet it is not going to be discussed until our very last meeting. I think that is inappropriate. So I am calling for that.
We can fight for a better city together.
Fun you don't have a choice, people. Wake up. God.
We need that energy from every single elected official, period. Like, that gave me so much life, and it was so edifying to hear her have that much passion, because I can't recall another time that I heard a city council member, a county supervisor speak with that much conviction, and it was incredibly inspiring. Go, Jackie.
Go, Jackie. Go, Dodgers. Go away, Santa Ana Winds. We will see you back here next week. Goodbye.